And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, August 24th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 29. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Dennis.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as on Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. We are streaming the cam feed right now through Twitch TV. You can find us there, as well as join the chat room live while we broadcast. So welcome everyone to the show. Welcome everybody in chat to the show. And thanks for joining us for this episode. Had Gamescom happen this week, and it was an interesting way that Gamescom happened, I suppose. I don't know. Xbox decides, or Microsoft decides, that they're not going to... I don't know. Did they do a presentation and just not stream it, or did they just have some press
releases
overnight?
I believe they held a press conference of some sort, a press interaction of some kind, but they didn't stream anything.
Yeah.
They didn't really want to... I don't think they wanted to expose themselves to the possibility of another bad presentation. They simply wanted to stick to the information, stick to the facts such as they are for this week.
Their previous public presentation before this was E3, of course. And so much has changed for them since that presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You would kind of think they would want to get in front of people and say, look, it's all different now, and here it is. I mean,
they've tried.
We all pretty much know.
They have tried several times with different pieces of information regarding different aspects of the system and its release, or their relationships with other developers and relationships with the facts. They've tried. It hasn't turned out particularly well for them. I think they just wanted to take a moment, take a pause, wait a beat, put a few facts out there for people to look at, and just give people an opportunity to not editorialize on their performance for a moment.
Yeah, and the news of everything that took place for them came out pretty much overnight for us here in the States. And what we got was their launch date. We did not get a release date from them, but we got a launch day lineup for them.
Mm-hmm. And they had already given us a window. They had said back at E3 that it would be November.
Right.
We already knew that it was this year. We already knew that it was probably going to be, you know, right in the middle of November. The chances of it coming out within days, and we said this a long time ago, anyone who's been around long enough for several console launches could tell you that consoles launch in November now. Mm-hmm. It's been... In the last 20 years, there's only been a couple of deviations from that rule. One was the Dreamcast, $9,999,
yeah.
And that was just for the gimmick, for the date gimmick, nothing else. And then you'd have to go back to, for a major console, you'd have to go back to 95, when it was a big free-for-all deathmatch. Everybody's entering the console game and releasing their own machine over the course of an entire year, for the most part. So... I don't think there was ever any question that they were going to release at that time of year. I don't really think that there was much question that Sony was going to do it either. So, but they'd already given us November. Yeah. They don't have to give us anything more than that. Not yet, anyway. The clock is ticking.
Yeah, we still don't have details, specific details, on the TV situation.
That's something that I don't think they're interested in talking about at all. Look, going all the way back to the announcement of the system, I think it's very clear that the TV portion of their entertainment platform, their delivery, such as it will be, with the Xbox One taking care of TV, is going to be a fraction of what people are expecting. It's the one thing, even though it dominated the discussion at E3, it's the one piece of hard information that hasn't been revisited since E3. Everything else has been about game performance, about hardware performance, about exclusives, timed exclusivity, multi-platform titles, cross-generational titles, competition, and, you know, EPIN measuring between them and Sony. It's been an awful lot of that sort of stuff without actually talking about what is supposed to amount to fully 50% of the system's purpose.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about it. When has anybody ever said the words IR blaster? Where the Xbox One is concerned.
Or pass-through. I mean, it's all been...
Or channel select, mm-hmm. right? Because there's... And nobody said anything about it because clarification is, you know, anathema to marketing. And at the moment, right now, the one thing they don't want to do is tell you all the things the Xbox One can't do.
Right.
And they are not lying. but they are allowing people to fill in the gaps themselves about what it'll do. They're just not talking about it. At some point, they will have to. My guess is that is the day after the system comes out. People are going to start being really upset when they open up the system and it doesn't perform, you know.
Doesn't do any DVR functions.
Right. There's no time-shifted content. There's no recording.
Makes me think of what people were speculating back when there was the... Who knows if, you know, you can share games all across consoles. It was right. All just internet.
It's a
gossip.
Ton of speculation that was never clarified. Unfortunately, I really am very sad that they reversed themselves on the family plan and the DRM before we ever knew what their full intention was. Whether those intentions were good or bad.
Because we'll never know now.
No, because we never will. They can tell us all they want to about the glorious land of milk and honey that the family sharing would have been. I can't believe a single thing you say now because I see no effort to implement it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that's bad. You reversed yourself because you decided it was the right decision. That's up to you. You certainly placated an enormous number of people. But I really wanted to know what it was they were trying to pass off on people. And not that they were ever going to do it properly. And not that I think it would have changed my mind or anyone else's. I was just, it was curiosity.
Yeah.
It was immense curiosity because whatever else they may have been, they were certainly being aggressive. So.
I just wonder if that's going to translate into numbers come November. You know, just because you pleased whoever was playing on the internet doesn't mean they were like, well, now I have to pre-order the one. Thanks,
right.
Microsoft.
There was a non-zero number of people who were in a position to buy an Xbox One, who wanted to be an Xbox fan. They're an Xbox fan in the current generation. It's where all their friends are. They're invested in the live online system. They wanted a reason to buy it. And they were specifically turned off. They really kind of tuned out because of the DRM and what they perceived it to be, because of the focus on TV and what they thought that would do, the kind of effect they thought it would have on just playing video games. When all of that stuff did a 180, I don't think reality changed an awful lot, but people's perceptions did. And they said, okay, you're doubling down on what I perceive to be. It's whatever. It's all about video games. You've gone back and you've focused on video games, and you've convinced me. So now I'll put down my money. Now I'll do my pre-order. Or now I'll stop being so scared about the possibilities. I don't think that's a huge number of people.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Although lately
well.
They've been going down like a checklist of, here's the complaints. Now we've marked that off. Nobody can complain about that anymore.
Yeah,
no one can complain about that. I mean, there's still some unchecked boxes on that list.
They've been going down a list of everything they've done, not a list of everything they've done wrong. Just a list of everything they've done. I expect the system to come out and be small and white. Now, instead of big and black, just because it's different from what they announced. And I am certain this is not revisionist history, and I am not defending what they had done before. Again, I am curious about what they would have said to further clarify and further defend their system as it stood back in May and June.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain things I don't think it was entirely necessary to put this much effort into. And it tells me that they're not very self-aware. They actually don't know why they're in this much trouble. They just see that they are in trouble, and they're suffering so much criticism that I think they're scrambling to just change everything in the hopes that it'll alleviate a lot of the pressure on them. That they don't exactly know how to strike that perfect pitch of what people want. And it's exactly what Sony has done. Sony has done some things people don't like. They don't like things being moved behind the paywall. A lot of people don't. They certainly don't like the fact that there's no more backward compatibility.
Right.
Share button.
A lot of people were really upset about the cons. And see, the share button is an excellent idea. Nobody had any real reason to be upset about it. It's just, you fill in the blanks for yourself. It's like, oh, that's great. I'm going to have a pop-up in every one of my games that tells me to log into Facebook, and that's annoying because that's what happens on the internet, and that's annoying. But they did such a good job of balancing the pros and cons and explaining the cons very, very, very quickly that they were able to strike a good balance, and people were able to accept the system for what it is or say, no, thanks, it's not really you know, my cup of tea, because I don't really like the games that are coming out for it. Microsoft hasn't been able to do this at all.
Yeah, they've been essentially muddying the waters.
Right.
I mean, it's...
It's a lot of...
Sony's like, here's what we got, here's what we don't got.
Right.
Taken. Microsoft's like, kind of want to do this and maybe hit a little pinch of this.
Pay attention to this curtain while we're back here doing this or whatever. That's what I understand,
It feels like Microsoft's making a bunch of a series of knee-jerk reactions, and that never goes over well with the buying public. Never does.
Nope. Even if you're delivering bad news, you need to be really firm. You need to know exactly what it is you're supposed to be saying. You have to be committed to an idea. And Sony's just been very forthright. They've been very straightforward. And Microsoft now is suffering for things I don't think it ever actually did wrong. They're suffering more for message than they are content. So I suppose having said all of that, going into Gamescom and not revealing an enormous amount of very specific information and not trying to make some impassioned speech, some great appeal to everyone to further argue their case that, no, we're still like everything you really want out of a console. They just shut their mouths. They delivered a little bit of content. They kept themselves off the air.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, they did no additional harm. And at this point, that's pretty good.
Yeah, considering for the past month, every week has been another 180 on the system.
Right, it's a joke. It's a bad joke.
Well, they also revealed that European pre-orders get FIFA 14 included. It's been a while since you've got a game included with your system purchase.
Yes, it is. It has.
Depending on the system, the Wii and Wii U had games included.
Wii Sports, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Wii Sports and Nintendo Land with the next tier up from the basic version was on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's usually something they do now to enhance the console sales sometime after launch when they give you a bundle.
Yeah. But I don't think Sony or Microsoft has had those.
Yeah, a pack-in is a different thing entirely.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting, though, that they're doing it for European pre-orders.
They're not doing it for all of them. There were an enormous number of restrictions and caveats and provisos and stuff surrounding who gets the copy of FIFA when and where and under what circumstances and by which point did you have to pre-order and on and on and such as that. Tier 1 or Tier 2 reservation territories, things like that. I didn't follow it because, you know, soccer, but sorry. But I automatically know that this isn't something that I have to worry about understanding. Mm-hmm. I just know that all of our fellows over in Europe were a little bit confused. So
I was going to say, we got at least two of them in the chat.
I know.
Right.
I'm very sympathetic. I certainly like to highlight the differences between us.
Right.
I don't
just watch his.
I don't have any sort
being
of.
Hunted video.
I have no problems with it. I adore it. I mean, I would love to be one of you. I will take almost anything over there. I love your various European places and all of your wonderful old. Timey architecture and society and
your
beer
weather is great
and
too.
Your beer and your food. I take all that. I love all of your stuff. I just soccer, really. I just don't understand
sport,
it. So much of it I don't understand in a very personal, kind of direct sort of way. I endeavor to appreciate that it matters to people. But I don't. I'm sorry. I don't personally understand it. I cannot personally understand it.
It's all sports ball to us.
Right.
Every last bit of it.
Right, it's all some other thing. Look, when I'm playing Sir, You're Being Hunted, and I open a house and I loot a canned pie, I don't know what to make of that. Right?
No, I agree.
And so it is by definition, a canned pie is by definition really funny to an American. It just is. It's a pie in a can. Who does that? I don't understand.
I can't even begin to imagine what that's like.
Right. So, I mean, I'm pointing that out because I made a great deal of fun of that.
We're going to get a care package in the mail at some point.
Right.
Yeah. Like, here, try all this
Oh,
stuff.
I will absolutely.
Oh, we'll take
I will completely try it.
Oh, we'll take
send
it.
Me your most disgusting, repellent, idiosyncratic food items, and I will absolutely not understand them, but I will eat them.
But enjoy them nonetheless.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is, it's very hard for us sometimes to, we have no direct touchstone to a lot of the angst surrounding what's going on in the European territories with the launch and the various restrictions and the contraction of all the launch territories and everything. I mean, this is exactly the sort of thing that is bred into us as Americans. It's like, this is like a the rest of the world problem, you know? We haven't had an issue with things not launching first in America in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we took it very personally because this is America. Don't you understand that? Like, don't delay your system 6 months. This is America. Come over here. Start releasing your stuff on time. And they did, you know. Now they pay more attention to us than they do the other territories, and that's maybe not strictly great. But anyway, we're digressing. Poor yes. Europeans.
Back to Xbox One and Microsoft's announced. Fable Legends was announced as well. Peggle 2 and Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare are going to come to Xbox One first. What else did we get? Obviously, we got the launch lineup. The publishing program, the self-publishing program for indies was another focus of what they had here. Indies, they apply for the program. They go through an application process. Current indies with proven track records are getting priority during this time.
With proven track records?
What does that exactly mean?
Exactly. It means if you're... I know.
So, who knows anymore?
Yeah.
Right. Whatever their standards are, I suppose, that says, hey, you've got a proven track record because... whatever the case. Maybe if you've already released your own game.
Yeah, somewhere. Maybe you publish a game, or is it like, do you get so many sales on a game? If that's even a figure they can get access to? You know,
if somebody wants their game on the Xbox One, I bet their indies are willing to provide it if that's the case. You know, hey, you know, the thing is, they probably get more information than what the news was saying, or what the article was letting on to, is that if you've surpassed this, or if you can prove that you've surpassed this many sales in your previous game or games,
you get to go to the head of the line.
We get to let us know so we can evaluate you or evaluate your submission quicker, that sort of thing. The indies who get accepted will get 2 dev kits, plus full access to achievements, the Xbox Live toolset, cloud services, Kinect, and Smart Glass. These dev kits will be free of charge. They will not have to pay for those dev kits. Games that are accepted will be placed on the same market storefront as games from major publishers. And I imagine there will be...
That's not surprising, actually.
No, it's not.
Goes back to a comment they made some time ago, and I believe it was Witten that made the comment, and it was a little bit out of... This may have been on that silly little not an AMA that IGN hosted with Mark Witten.
Right.
The very highly selective, very editorialized... ask me exactly what I tell you to ask me, yeah. AMA, where he said games are games are games. And I believe it was well understood at that point that they didn't want to segregate indies into their own separate storefront, which I think that's very, very good. The indie label is still extremely important because it means something very particular about relationships between publishers, distributors, developers, ownership of IP, expectations of budgets and stuff in particular. But as far as delivery of the games, accessibility of the games, we've proven long since that it doesn't matter. They shouldn't be segregated into separate places. You go to Steam right now, you will find on their front page, scrolling banner, you will find $10 indies sitting right next to $60 AAA games. And there's a reason for that.
If you go to their top sellers, I believe at least there's an indie game in their top 5 right now, at the very least.
Right.
You go in their top 10, yes, it's going to be right there on the front page when you go to top sellers.
I still think Microsoft is very much at odds with themselves about this indie business. It isn't a question of whether they were openly hostile to them and Sony was some kind of magnet for them. It isn't that. It's that there is already a very long history, an adversarial history between Microsoft and their the way that they publish games, their very usurious policies, and they're even at their best, they're kind of restrictive and obtuse and slow and hard to penetrate, and that kind of thing just didn't exist with Sony, mostly because that kind of publishing arrangement didn't exist in any form with Sony. But what that meant is when Sony decided to open up to indies, they weren't having to reverse years and years and years of existing policy. They weren't having to penetrate layer after layer of habit, you know. And that's a lot of what Microsoft is doing right now. They're trying to really court the notion of indies. They're certainly not so stupid that they can't understand how important that is. They may be a little slow, but they do understand. It's having to redesign their entire business model and... from top to bottom, right? From the toy box all the way up to the office suite, to their to not just the Windows on the desktop, but they're real money makers like the server operating systems and their Office software, all of that stuff, from the top to the bottom, everything in between, mobile, all of it, that entire company is a cold-blooded, slow-moving, dopey, lumbering, sometimes very foolish-looking giant. They are enormous. They have frightening amounts of money, but they're not nimble. They just aren't. They exist. They're so stratified. They're so strangely organized that they're not as light on their feet and nimble as other companies are. Sony as a whole is also a very, very big company, but the way that they've organized themselves, the divisions of Sony that handle the PlayStation in particular and a lot of their online stuff, like Sony Online Entertainment, there's a reason we're seeing much more interesting stuff coming out of them for the past several years is because they've been given some degree of autonomy. They're given a ton of support, but also the ability to make their decisions as they see fit. So they're able to be more nimble. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Sony. And I guess in an effort to be fair to Microsoft, they are really just trying to work their way past and through and around ages and ages of a certain type of corporate culture. Even though we've only seen the evidence of this where indies are concerned for the past few years.
Yeah.
They will get there,
mm-hmm.
but they will be late. They will be as late
bringing up the rear,
to
yeah.
the indie revolution as Sony was to the online portal stuff that Microsoft had such an advantage with.
And to the price point of what...
Right. But, I mean, if you remember back in 2005, 2006, it was immediately apparent how far ahead Microsoft was going to be in the online space than Sony. And it was because of the years they have spent organizing different... elements of different disparate networks and being able to bring them together. They understood how to build a network and move it into hardware space and get all of that stuff working. And Sony didn't get that.
No.
And it took them a very long time to get past the problems they had, the things that caused them not to get it. And Microsoft's doing the same thing now with the independent developers, unfortunately.
So. The other thing to mention on that indie, the self-publishing program, was that some point after the console launch, a system update will allow all Xbox One consoles to be used for development and self-publishing.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
It's... Yeah. So at some point, there was no date given, but at some point after the console's launch, your system will be able to be used for development and self-publishing.
That seems a little bit misleading, though. That's still going to require...
You're still going to have to apply.
You're still going to have to apply. Yeah. You're still going to have to pay all the requisite fees. You're still going to have to license properly. It's not like it's suddenly going to become an open development platform for anybody with, you know, a little free time on their hands. That's not what's going to happen, I don't think. Not at all. I'd love to be wrong. That would certainly be revolutionary. But they're not just going to flip a switch and all of a sudden, you know.
All of a sudden you can download the development app
right.
and get started.
It'll be like an entry-level dev kit situation. That's what Daniel was saying. It won't be as good as a real dev kit, but it'll be better than nothing, most likely.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But I suppose if you're in this... The real battle is going to be fought by people that will be able to have access to real dev kits.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's going to change much. It's certainly fine. I certainly have no problems with it, with the exception of the fact that their ultimate goal is to get everything running through there. Through all of their online services. They want everything published absolutely through their portals. Sony does too. But Microsoft, again, has a history of being much more restrictive where that is concerned. And we already know that they're making efforts to assault the... This is a semi-related topic, but they're making the same types of efforts to restrict the openness of development on the PC in much the same way. Windows 8 is largely based around that because they want development of... Windows apps to be running through the Microsoft App Store, through the Windows App Store. Yeah. They really want to restrict. They want to give you all the tools in the world so that you can create something that can only be sold through them. That is part of that goal. That's unlovely, but whatever. Still too much speculation right now.
Yeah,
I'm not going to feel one way or the other about it, I don't think, for a while.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll look at the Sony side of Gamescom and go over their presentation and the things that were announced for them in Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music from N+, from way back when, and word of N++ at Sony's Gamescom
what
presentation.
What else could it possibly have been?
Yeah, really. N+2? Nah, just N++ from Medinet Studios there. So, anyway, welcome back to the show. We are going to move into what Sony did at Gamescom. I was able to head over and watch this with James and Jeremy. As it happened on Tuesday.
It was on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. At about noon our time. And went over there and watched it. And really, we were expecting a date is what we were expecting from this thing. There was speculation that, hey, we'll get a date at Gamescom as to when they're going to release the PlayStation 4. We'll get some other things. We were speculating on a price drop on the Vita and a couple of other things. Maybe a bundle of some sorts or something like that. There was plenty of speculation for this thing. We got all of those things, and we got really a horrible presentation. A horrible presented presentation,
quick,
I guess
you
could say.
Go to a shot of the audience right now. Right when there's something on stage, go to the audience.
It wasn't sure. You know, it opened with, sort of a view of the UI.
Mm-hmm.
The interface of like sharing content and watching somebody's shared content and that sort of thing, doing messages in between. You really couldn't get a good sense of that though with the way that they were showing that off. They had an odd camera angle for that, and the other shot was a wide one. They never went to a direct feed of
not of the introduction.
Right. No.
So it was a little. It was nice to see the UI. It was nice to see that the UI wasn't terribly far. From the cross media bar that we have right now, of which I am an enormous
mm-hmm.
fan.
Yeah.
I love it. It was really good. I like that they're sticking very close to the same design philosophy of really clean user interface elements. That all looked really, really nice. But yeah, it was watching a live stream of a game and then joining directly into that. And a very not-so-subtle effort to show us how quickly that could be performed.
Right. And we got that, and then, of course, the show began proper with just talking about the line. One of the surprising things was GT6. We got a date for that, which we always thought it was September.
I thought the date was earlier. Is this another one of those fictions that we built for ourselves? Someone just kind of waved their fingers at us at one point back in E3, and we're like, September, yeah. Everybody heard September, right? Now I can't find any reference to September, and all of a sudden it's like, no, it was
It was announced.
December.
It was given a date until Gamescom, but December 6th.
Well, it does, but it does change things for me a little bit. I know it doesn't for everybody, but it does change things. I won't be turning my PS3 on very often once my PS4 shows up. Mm-hmm. So, December being after November, there's less chance that I'm going to play that than there is, you know, that just to boot it up and play something else on the PS4. I'm really unlikely to play past generation consoles once the next generation hardware comes out. I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't think it's an overwhelming number either, but I think if there's something else that can be played on the better machine, then I'm going to play that. For me, GT6 won't be anything more than a curiosity now.
I don't have any more room to plug in anything else without unplugging.
There's that as well.
Unplugging the devices that I have already. I guess I could take out my On Live. I suppose I could
still
unplug
that. Still
have that
plugged up right now?
I just left it there, you know. For there was no reason to unplug it because I didn't have anything to put in its place. But yeah, I guess I could take that out and plug in one of the new systems and that sort of thing. People are running into that problem. People are running into the other problem that, well, I was going to throw my PS3 into GameStop, going to trade that in and get whatever kind of credit and boost towards purchasing the new system. So I won't have that. There is no backwards compatibility. There is no announcement of a GT6 for PS4. So
do I really want to give this up and miss out on GT6?
That's not a very easy decision to make for either one of the consoles because neither one is providing backward compatibility. Both of them are probably still going to have a thing or two over the next year that might be interesting enough to keep. But for no other reason than to still have access to an awful lot of the content that you've paid so much money for, I have no interest in trading in my existing systems. I don't think I'm going to play them, but I certainly don't want the
You don't want to take the option completely off.
Right. I don't. I want to be able to pull it off the top shelf in my closet or from out of wherever and play it when I want to play it, should I want to play it.
You're right about that. For the PlayStation 3, I've invested too much to just give it up for another system.
And if it was if the next system was backward compatible, then fine, by all means. But and I'm not even saying they should be. I'm actually very much in the camp that says that it would just be ridiculous to even try. I'm glad they're not trying. I'm glad that that argument isn't on the table this generation. But it really does mean that in terms of trading in or trying to get some kind of money out of it, you really, I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. I would recommend holding on to your system.
Yeah.
Chatting in the chat room. Somebody said one day you want to pick up Crackdown and chase orbs all over again. No. Plus, Saints Row 4 does Crackdown better than what Crackdown did. And Saints Row 4, to give you an idea of that, 500 orbs in Crackdown, 1,200 in Saints Row 4.
I imagine to make it a little easier, like maybe actually after a certain point give you little markers on your mini-map or whatnot.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how it looks. I just know that with 1,200 in the city, they're everywhere. You can see them everywhere. You know, they're actually more of an obstruction than they are a hidden object.
You're giving me too many things,
there is no
man.
Place to hide these. Let's just put them in there. But anyway, so we got... that was talked about, and they talked more about plans for the Vita. They mentioned a drop
the
in Vita? Price.
Yep.
On the Vita, yes.
Vita.
The PlayStation Vita. It was
we
dropped.
Really do like you guys.
We do.
But soccer and Vita.
It was dropped down to $200. All models of the system, but yeah, $200. It is in stores now for $199 is what you can get it for. And they mentioned that we'd have significant price cuts on the memory cards as well, which is a good thing.
Yeah. A $20 price cut on 1632 and
a 10 price cut on the 8 gig and a $5 price cut on the 4 gig. So I would tell you now, having owned a Vita, that you should, if you're a PS Plus member, you need to fork over the $80 and get that 32 gig card.
Why?
So that you can have the amount of games that they give you for PS Plus, so that you can have them all the time right there on your system for when you do the traveling or anything like that. Now, granted, if you don't travel,
what's the
lot,
average size of a PlayStation Vita game?
I don't know. I'd
make a guess. Be smart for
under
a second.
Under a gig. But over, you know.
So gig and a half.
Yeah, maybe gig
Let's
and a
be
half.
Silly and say 2 gigs.
Okay.
Okay. Just playing devil's advocate a little bit here. How much do you actually need to carry around at once before to cross the threshold of from annoyance to convenience, right? How many games do you need to just have at one time? Without, I guess, going back to an internet connection and like clearing your card and then re-downloading a bunch of other things, right? Is it not, I don't know, like 5-6 games? Is that enough? Isn't that enough? It would be enough for me, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a matter of personal preference.
Going into the entire thing without feeling like I've been misled or lied to now, with plenty of time for people to talk extensively about what they think. If I could have a half a dozen games with me at any one point in time sitting on that card, that would, I imagine that to be very, very satisfying. I would think that would be more than enough, actually, considering what we've been dealing with in handheld gaming up until like 5 minutes ago, which was having to carry around sacks of plastic discs or little chips and stuff like that. So the act of being able to just have a handful of them on that system, I'm not saying that their prices are good and that what they're offering in terms of storage is even fair. I'm just saying, it's really, really, we've just elevated that same degree of displeasure, right? We've taken all of that same anger we have about other things and just translated it to, well, this is not convenient enough for me. This is not cheap enough for me. I mean, by all means, keep at it because the prices are stupid and they could just as easily be letting you use commodity memory. But I don't know. I guess my real curiosity is how much is enough to be sufficient for when you hop on the train or go on a short trip out of town or something like that.
Yeah, again, probably a matter of personal preference because you know how I am at just picking a place to go eat. very indecisive. So it's like I want as much choice as I can have on my system when I'm away from it. So for me, it was like I want to go the highest I can get. Now, I had a lot of – I got it, I think, for $15 because I had Best Buy rewards. It was on sale. I waited and waited and waited.
You got the best possible deal you could on the on the largest amount of memory that you could.
I got a ton.
And I do understand that. I'm not unsympathetic to the idea of having more storage. I understand it perfectly. I'm just trying to think that it's not a good price, right? $40 for 16 gigabytes isn't good, but 16 gigabytes has got to be enough. It's got to be enough. I mean, unless you only can make it, unless you have horrifyingly bad internet and you can only get to that internet every once a week or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like maybe I'm just not understanding. And if I owned one, I would understand. So, I don't know. If the universe just wants to provide me with one so that I can have the necessary perspective to speak intelligently on the matter, that would be great. But I don't know. I just feel like 16, that ought to be enough. I could probably get by with 8. Just, again, understanding how big each individual game is. If I could just have, like, even probably 4 games around all the time, that might be enough for me.
And the question Navid asks in the chat room is, can you keep Vita games on PS3 and swap them to and from? It works the same way that most kind of digital distribution services sort of work, is that as long as you're a PS, any games you buy or that are given to you free through PS Plus, you need to basically put them in your cart or down purchase them, basically. You don't necessarily have to download them, but once you've purchased them, even if they're free, that's on your record. That's it. You've got that game for forever. Mm-hmm. You know, until their system is dead. And so, you know, regardless, if I don't have to have them all on one card.
Right, you can just go back to the PlayStation Store and look at your download list, which is a complete list of everything that you own, mm-hmm. everything that you have rights to, and just say, I want this, this, and this. I want to download these things right now. And that is there so that you can clear everything off of your hard drive if you need to, or you can uninstall things that you haven't played for a while or that are old or that you're done with, but you can re-download them later. I'm very comfortable with that. And I wouldn't have any problem. I wouldn't have any problem treating the Vita like a very small solid state drive on a PC. Yeah. You know, people who can't afford to have like a really really big drive for storage. If you got a small solid state drive a couple of years ago when they were barely affordable and they were only about 60 gigs or something like that, you only have a few titles on there at a single point in time. But mm-hmm. if your internet's good enough and you have access to your Steam account, then whatever. I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. I do it absolutely all of the time. So I think I'm just missing. I think I'm missing a point of reference. And then I suppose add to that that it's just very stupid to charge so much for so little when things can be had much cheaper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sony themselves have 32 gigabyte.
I know,
yeah.
Exactly.
For a lot cheaper.
I don't know. Whatever. It still seems okay to me. They dropped the price of the system to $200. That's a fairly big deal.
That is a huge deal. The other thing we got was that Twitch is coming to PS4. We were left thinking it would be Ustream. We didn't know.
Well, I mean, at E3, Microsoft made a big deal about we're going to have Twitch on our system.
They're streaming. They specifically said, they've already got a Twitch viewing app, on their console. And Sony does. I'm pretty sure Sony doesn't at all. And they were very clear that when they announced their streaming, the ability to cache and stream gameplay to the internet, they were very clear that their partnership was made with Twitch.
Yeah.
And Sony just sort of was like, and Ustream.
You'll have share button that you can upload, and they just...
And they said, to this, 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 and this, and they did not say Twitch. And you can have arguments about the technical superiority of one system versus the next, but Twitch has positioned themselves perfectly as the streaming service for games and gamers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little unfortunate that Sony had no apparent partnership with them, but it became very, very clear at Gamescom that they had rectified that problem. Overwhelmingly. I mean, even Twitch was very, very... Twitch themselves had to do a lot of the clarification because Sony didn't trumpet that deal quite as much as they could. But they're going to have apps for streaming up and streaming down, you know, for viewing and for actively streaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's very good for them. That's very good for a lot of people because that's becoming more popular all the time.
And exactly.
It's really good for the console gamers.
I was able to close that tab I had open for the console to PC type stream device that you can, you know, it's basically a pass through or whatever, mm-hmm. but that yeah. you could stream from. And then I had that up there because I thought, yeah, I may want to look into that, like $180. I was like, I may want to look into that. And then I realized, I was like, wait, they're going to be able to do it themselves. I don't need that. So
it was, I still think that's going to be the superior way to do it. I think there are going to be a number of, maybe not restrictions, but I don't think you're going to have the kind of control that you would necessarily be familiar with. As a person who streams PC games, I think you're going to still want to find your own way of doing it. If you want the best possible experience, if you want to deliver the best possible content, and if you want to arrange, your scene the way that you do, you know, if you want to build your stream to be something very specific. But if you're just simply looking to have something available on the internet for everybody else, I'm sure that what the consoles have built in will suffice.
Yeah. The other thing we got out of this, we got some gameplay of some titles, and not the best view of gameplay because of the way that they were doing their camera work. We got the instant streaming to the Vita.
Oh, with Assassin's Creed. They did that with Assassin's Creed. And
the live sort of, here's how it works, or here's how seamless it is.
Oh, no, yes, of course. That was the camera shot of a camera shot of a console.
Right.
That's what that was.
And let's show
that was the off-screen.
Right, let's show the guy playing the game during a cutscene.
Right.
When you're not really playing the game, but let's have it focused on him.
I believe them. I believe you. I absolutely believe you that this is how it's going to work. I'm completely underwhelmed by your demonstration because, unfortunately, this is one of those things that, like, I get it. It's not complicated. You're telling me it does this, and it does this. It's a seamless handoff. It's perfectly smooth gameplay. That's fantastic. I understand it. Until I actually have it happen in front of me, until I do it, I don't think it's going to have the impact that they really want it to, you know?
It's like watching a video of Dark Souls and then playing.
Yeah, it's very, very different. What I'm going to need to do is I'm going to need to pick up that Vita and go to the bathroom. And in that, like, myself, I have to do that myself. And in that moment, I'm actually going to understand, oh, this is great, man. This is really good, you know. everything's perfectly smooth and it's wonderful and it's fantastic. Well, I mean, but you understand exactly what I'm saying.
And also the game runs well.
And the game looks pretty good.
So we got all of that out of the Sony, and then of course we got the release date of the PlayStation 4. We were speculating.
There were rumors that it was going to be the end of October.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people were hoping for. Of course.
Because who wants to wait? But mid-November, that's fine. That's a little bit longer for everybody to pay it off. For the people that
I think everybody thought that Sony was on such a roll of beating Microsoft at everything else that it's like, well, we know they're going to release in November.
On my birthday.
So we might as well have the Sony thing beat them and come out in October. But November 15th is when we're getting it in North America. Europe and everybody else getting it November 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a longer wait than usual, I would think, for something like this.
It's only 2 weeks. It's not. I don't think it's that bad. It could be much, much worse. When, again, you look at Microsoft's performance, they've got a number of territories that have to wait months and months. Possibly the better part of a year. We don't really know. I do think, I don't think this is what they were trying to do, but Sony releasing even closer to the Xbox is going to have if they released on October 21st, right, that would put them out ahead of when a lot of the multi-platform cross-gen titles have already given their dates.
Mm-hmm.
We already know that Assassin's Creed, we know that Watch Dogs, we know that a handful of other things. This stuff is all, those things have their date. If Sony comes out super early,
Call of Duty,
they're coming out in advance of many of the games that are going to be used to justify the purchase of a next-gen console. Yes, they're coming out sooner. Yes, you could argue that they're on the market for 3 weeks before Microsoft, 4 weeks before Microsoft can get theirs out, something like that. It doesn't really matter if there's no games to play.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these systems, while they both do have exclusive titles, they've got stuff that's in the launch window, you know, sometime in the next 3 months that help people justify picking it up. A lot of us are looking at it and saying, okay, look, it's the same decision I've always made, right? A lot of us have both consoles. I kind of choose which one is better for my multi-platform needs, and the multi-platform games are a huge influence over what I buy and when.
Mm-hmm.
And if a system comes out and it doesn't have any of that stuff at it, I don't know, it doesn't do them any favors. There's really nothing to be gained by coming out ahead of all your software. So, yeah, go ahead. Come out in the middle of November, right at the exact time when all the video games in the world are coming out.
And looking over the Xbox One's launch lineup, and I'd have to look at Sony's PS4 launch lineup as well. Exclusives, games that I could only get on that system. There's nothing that it feels a lot like the 360's release, where I have very few titles to pick from for the launch. They've got, I mean, there's a good list here of stuff, but Assassin's Creed 4, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty, what was the other one? Watch Dogs. Any of that stuff that's kind of like, hey, I'm kind of interested in that. It's also available for the PS4. It's also available for the PC.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no exclusive on this list of first launch day titles that are holding my interest for the Xbox One. Even Killer Instinct, which is going to be a free to play game.
Yeah, with the
free to play, and you get a character free.
One character.
The rest of the characters, $5 each.
That's how
they're monetizing that title.
There was a time when that was the joke. That was the black humor about the possible future of
Capcom
free to play.
Yeah,
that was it. You know,
your characters are on your disc, but you know you're gonna have to pay to unlock them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're living in the joke, defending the joke now, sort of shrugging our shoulders about it and saying, whatever. I'm acclimated.
We're pretty used to it now.
How can you do that?
What, be used to
can
it?
You no, can you do this? Is this actually something that can be done? Can you build, we've talked about this before, I've asked you for clarification on how the entire fighting game thing works, because you live in it, you breathe it, you play in it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's very cultural. Mm-hmm. It requires people to be very dedicated to both the fighting game world and in each game in particular. Mm-hmm. Is this even possible? Can you legitimately build a worthwhile fighting game experience around a game that only comes with... This isn't like... I'm just saying, this isn't like HeroClix. This isn't Magic. Mm-hmm. This isn't TCG. It's a fighting game.
Right.
Is this viable? Do you see that as...
Well, in the fighting game genre, I know that to stay competitive, you know, you're going to have to get every character. So you want to know what each character can and can't do.
Exactly.
Because you have to have every character available so you can see what they can do, right? So if you get like one character, your main character, and you have a problem with a certain one, well, you'd have to use that character that you have a problem with, open up practice, see what their flaws and weaknesses are, and then see how you can exploit them later on.
Right.
In this case,
you're
going to have to pay money
for the privilege of even...
Practicing.
Taking a cursory look, a rudimentary look at another character. I would never do that. I have no concept of how to approach this game because I don't even know which other things I would possibly want because I can't, supposedly can't get my hands on them. I don't know. It just doesn't, maybe extra characters is a thing, but like one character and then everything else is a fiver after that just doesn't seem it doesn't seem the right way to build a fighting game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not just that it's Fiverr. They do have $20 gets you all eight characters total.
Mm-hmm.
According to this, six at launch and then two down the road.
Two later for unlock later on. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, so essentially I'm paying $20 for a fighting game.
If you want to look at it like that. But.
Yeah, but later on he says there's a season two where they're going to repeat the whole process again, more characters and whatnot. Which is what everyone else is doing. I mean, I could take Injustice, for example. You pay $60 for that game, but there are, let me see, four or five characters that's been released since its release. $5 a pop, I believe.
And they are not slowing down on that either.
No. And if you want to stay competitive, especially if you're in the competitive arena of fighting games, you're going to have to get those characters to know what they can do.
Yeah, that's a load of crap for me.
Yeah,
I think there are fair arguments to be made about free-to-play models and about the monetization of collectible assets and about how fairly you can roll people up into further purchases when you release significant, you know, individual or batch upgrades to an otherwise free-to-play game. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's because I'm so ignorant of how fighting games in general work, and maybe somebody else can see that, you're not really looking at the picture the way it's meant to be seen. But like I said, there are arguments to be made in favor of free-to-play. They are certainly not the cancer exactly we thought they were going to be. But they're also not any kind of real salvation, not for gaming as a whole. They're really good for certain people. And I'm very suspicious of this model being able to grow into the kind of thing that any given community is willing to support. I'm assuming that makes sense. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah.
But we gotta take a break. When we come back, we'll have our second hour of in-game chat. We will be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Dennis, what is this?
This is Catan.
Ah, you knew.
Good sound, because I've never seen a table go flipping during an online game of Catan.
No, not at all. This game is on Steam now.
Yeah,
But what's the interesting part of it?
I don't know. I haven't...
It lacks multiplayer.
Seriously?
Yeah. It has no multiplayer component.
Yeah, just take out the one thing that really matters. That's a good point.
Has anybody ever played Catan alone? How do you do that?
I don't know. Yeah, there's some people wondering what's going on. No, I don't know.
Yeah, because if it's like the Xbox Live version where the AI is just stupid, it's no fun.
Well, I'm not even a big board game guy, but I understand. Like, I understand there are things that... I understand. Why would you do that?
It may get like patched in or something like that. But from what I was reading on tweets, somebody had tweeted on our feed, "Hey, it's great! I picked up Catan. It's on Steam." And I remember who it was. It was Kurt Mott Wackorb who had replied to that and said, "Hey, man, that was great. I'm glad it's there, but I'm not picking it up until they put multiplayer."
Yeah, I suppose if like Steam has something that handle multiplayer, make sure people actually have the game. Oh wait, it's called Steam.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Things like that are all about the other people. They're all about the other humans. No AI could possibly be good enough because I don't know. You need that love-hate relationship with the people that are willing to gather around a table with you and play a board game style game or literal board game. Yeah, they have to like you enough. You have to like each other enough, or at least trust each other enough to sit around a table and know them well enough to know that they're horrible enough to do the things to you that are necessary to beat you or compete with you.
Make you trade the stuff they need to win.
Sure, it's all a very human thing. It's an absolutely human thing. That's there's still that little spark, that little whatever. Video games still don't have that yet.
Yeah. So welcome back to In-Game Chat. Don't forget our email, everyone@ingamechat.net. We are streaming live on Twitch right now. And you can join in the chat room and chat with us. You can call us if you'd like, 334-272-9228. We have a Steam group on Steam, in-game chat. Join that if you'd like. From time to time, we do give away, and some of the members of the group will also give away extra games that they've got or do some Steam trading card stuff, that sort of thing. One of the things that I actually plan on doing is giving away the extra games I got from the Humble Origin Bundle.
If there's anyone out there who doesn't have those by now.
You know, I'm waiting for the Humble Origin bundle to be over with, because really, you should just go pick it up from there, honestly, if there's any of those games. That's what I did. There were two games on that list I wanted, Dead Space 3 and Battlefield 3, and paying the above-average price of...
It's hovered right around $475, $485.
It's $5 is what I paid. Yeah. I got those two games. $5 for two games, especially...
Now, Dead Space 3 was not an above-the-average
purchase. It wasn't.
Dead Space was actually a part of the basic package. Battlefield 3, and it is just the basic package. Although you can almost always find their premium upgrade that has all of the DLC, all of the map packs, everything. You can almost always find that for something close to $15, either on Amazon or one of the other DD stores online, or even directly from Origin. It's almost always on sale at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's to be expected, since Battlefield 4 is minutes away, effectively.
And the when you buy these, you get the Origin keys and you get the Steam keys if they're available on Steam.
And just point out also that EA is not getting a penny from this at all. It is all going to charity.
EA's decision on this was that usually on Humble bundles, you have three options. You can have them go to charity. And then even when you go to charity, you can split it between the charities that are on that list. You can have some of the proceeds go to Humble themselves to pay for server costs and that sort of things. Or you can have it go to the developers of the games. They work in a lot of indie titles. But a lot of publishers are getting in on it now. THQ did. Deep Silver, I think, got in on it.
Yeah, Deep Silver did it a couple weeks ago.
THQ did right before, you know.
Was it right before they went bankrupt?
Or was it right after? I think it was right after they did it. And so a lot of the publishers getting on it. This is the first time EA has done it. It is the Origin bundle. But they decided that, don't give them the option to give us any of the money. Have it go to either the charity or split between you guys at Humble to pay for the cost. And it has raised over $9 million. It is the biggest...
$9 million with 1.8 million sales.
Yeah, and it's still got, 4 days left?
Yeah, something crazy.
Something like that. It's got three
days,
or 4 days.
17 hours.
Yeah,
right.
So what all's on it? It's Dead Space 1.
Dead Space 1, Burnout Paradise.
Burnout Paradise, which is a fantastic package.
Crisis
it's the
2.
Ultimate box, by the way. It's the Burnout Paradise Ultimate box for PC.
Crisis 2 Maximum Edition.
Okay.
Mirror's Edge. Dead Space 3.
No Dead Space 2, strangely.
Yeah, it's weird.
Interesting, yeah.
Medal of Honor, and then the above average games are Command & Conquer, Red Alert 3, Uprising.
That was an added one they just did.
Battlefield 3, Populous, which was the other added one, and The Sims 3.
Okay.
There was also a few Sims 3 expansion packs in the in the main part of that as well.
Okay, yeah, plus the starter pack. Don't have the specifics right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just some add-on packs that they have.
Now, I think it's worth pointing out, everything on that list, everything, I guess you could even bring the above average stuff in here. Again, because Battlefield 3 and Sims 3 are at the end of their useful lifespan.
Yeah, totally.
Mirror's Edge, Dead Space 1, both of those have been $5 to death.
Burnout Paradise.
On Steam and on Origin. Burnout Paradise, same thing. They're all, Dead Space 1, Mirror's Edge, Burnout Paradise, that's money well spent at any price, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think they were all fantastic. I think Dead Space 1 is one of the best possible things we could have hoped for out of a more modern action-y survival horror type of thing. Not strict survival horror, but a lot of people can say a lot of different things about Mirror's Edge cost at full price, and that's neither here nor there. It was still, nonetheless, a very excellent game. Burnout Paradise was fantastic. Nothing but fun. Mm-hmm. All three of those things have been able to be had for just a few dollars for a really long time, so no great loss there. Medal of Honor was not a good game. It did not sell well at all. So you're essentially not losing anything special there. And again, that itself is at least a couple of years old now. I think one of the big drivers of this sale is that Dead Space 3, which is a relatively current game. I mean, that's this year.
Yeah.
Did not sell particularly well, was not very well received, at least not in comparison to the previous two games. So putting that in the cheap pack where you can effectively get that for, a dollar, you can get it for pennies, that's going to drive an awful lot of participation. And the ability for an awful lot of people who have stayed away from the Battlefield series for a while now to just say, okay, I'll chuck $5 at it and see what that's about.
Yeah.
You know, get in and shoot them up a little bit at almost no cost. And so, yeah, you're going to get an awful lot of participation for a lot of this stuff. And a lot of those games are absolutely worth having just at their normal sale prices of a few dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. EA has had almost no goodwill for the last several months. And you can look at this. You can look at their decision with just the most flinty, jaded, cynical eye possible. And you're not wrong. You are absolutely not wrong. They are giving away a bunch of well-loved games directly from the store. They're just giving it away. Nothing for them. Nothing but an awful lot of goodwill, because you just can't. Even John Walker from Rock Paper Shotgun couldn't muster up anything hateful to say about it, and he was kind of stymied by his own reaction. He was like, there's just really no bad way to, like, there's no bad way to look at this. Yes, they are effectively giving away games and buying some goodwill, but
even if the entire purpose is to buy goodwill, is that so bad? There's still goodwill.
I mean, does it really matter? This is the thing that we've tried to talk about. When EA does something right, even if they do it cynically, even if it was a calculated decision, when they do things that we agree with, we should support them. You don't boycott the entire company because they did something marvelously stupid with SimCity. You boycott SimCity. And then when they do something good over here, like when they did terrible things ages ago, but then they showed up and did Dead Space and Mirror's Edge, it's like, okay, we're going to support your good decision making, and we are going to punish as best we can your bad decision making. And over enough time, they will get the point. The same way a baby child will get the point, EA will get the point. So by all means, please take their games from them.
Yeah.
Give some money to the Red Cross or charity, and then go on a forum and complain about how you don't like any of those charities and they're not efficient enough, or blah, blah, some other useless blah. Go ahead and do that. But by all means, you know, give them a dollar. Take their games from them. Give them one more reason out of nearly 2 million to continue to do things like this.
Well, then they doubled down on their goodwill and offered their...
Oh, they did.
Games
didn't
guarantee
they? Then
on
they went
Origin.
And did something.
Holy cow!
Kind of unprecedented.
Yeah,
I think this is the first time in
they outsteamed Steam or something. You know, it's
yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I don't recall ever having PC games available for return ever. I mean,
it's there is some amount of precedent for this in a few different places. Steam has for a while been fairly good about. Pre-orders,
right?
As an example, digital delivery a lot of times is like, oh, you spent your money, like it's done, man.
You're done.
You don't just go back to GameStop and get your $5 from Bob GameStop. Like that money goes all the way up the chain to the guys, and it's done for. But Steam, in a number of places, either in response to a huge backlash, or you know, like in we mentioned Medal of Honor. That's actually something that I pre-ordered once, and I believe it was because it got you into the Bad Company 2 beta or something
that. Medal of yeah, I know what you're saying.
I can't remember. And I kind of was like, well, I don't know about the single player, but I'm definitely maybe interested in the multiplayer. And it was oh so bad. It was so bad. And I like wrote to Mr. Steam and I was like, dude, this game's horrible. And they were like, okay, don't make a habit of it, but okay.
Right.
You know, so they'll they refund the money and all this. They've done that before. The mobile app marketplaces have a very narrow window of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Apple, but I definitely know about the Android marketplace has a brief window of time where you can be like, this thing is really stinky. I really don't like this thing I bought, and you can get a refund. You know,
these are not advertised methods of getting your money back. They're just things that you take upon yourself to do. Amazon's the same way. I've had situations where it's like, I'm sorry, Amazon, I did something stupid. And they're like, that's okay. Just don't make a habit of it.
Right, right. And it's a bit of an off-the-books policy, and there's some recognition that, like, yeah, these are digital goods, so, like, this is a little bit different. There's no real malfunction in it exactly. You just kind of regret your purchase. But yes, please don't make a habit of it exactly.
Yeah.
This is the first time where somebody's come out with a solid policy and they're like, nope, this is how it works. And this is how it will always work. You can return your games. What is it? 24 hours after your first
launch. As, or
within the first 7 days.
Yeah, within the first 7 days from when you purchased it, or within the first 7 days after the game's release date,
if you pre-ordered it.
As long as all those remain true, you can get a full refund for it.
So you could pre-order a game. The game comes out. You don't get a chance to play it for 5 days. You finally launch the game, realize it's really, really horrible. Within that first day after launching the game, you can get your money back. That's... Look, man, as a policy, that's really, really, really good. That is...
They've got the same thing in place, too, where as long as you don't make a habit of it. However, I would think theirs is a little bit more lenient on...
Well, because it's because they've actually published
because
it
they
as
put it
a
out
policy.
There. Right, exactly.
It is more ironclad, and I'm sure that they will say, if they saw somebody making a habit of it, that, like... Look, we've noticed like a certain kind of activity on your account. We're really not. We really don't appreciate
this. You'll get a nicely worded email.
Well,
saying,
you might get a nicely worded email. You might also get a, you know, lead boot.
You may not get anything. Just,
right.
You know.
Because again, this is EA. Let's not forget that this is EA. But the fact that they are doing this represents, if anything, it represents a little bit of self awareness about where improvement can be made in online storefronts. We should point out this only applies to EA's own games.
I was going
to
say that's all. You may return EA full game downloads, PC or Mac, purchased
can't be DLC.
On Origin for a full refund. Yes,
And it can't be a third party game. Obviously, that's perfectly fair. They can't necessarily guarantee everything with everybody else's games, but this does put them in a position better than Steam.
Yeah.
Because even if Steam had that exact same policy, half of the games that they've released currently are free to play. Any of their proper full retail release games, the most recent one is
for Valve is Portal 2.
Portal 2, yeah, it's 2 years old. So they're not really they're the marketplace for everyone else's games. Origin is the marketplace for EA games,
mm-hmm.
and EA having so many properties, this is a really, really good deal for them. It puts them in a position that nobody else actually can. Be in, and it certain removes a little bit of the anxiety of buying something from EA.
Navid says that tells me future EA games will generally have a heavy focus on online social aspects like the new Need for Speed. Interesting you say that. There was an interview with Joystick or Polygon, I think, this morning that they posted from Gamescom with Peter Moore, who said that from the future, now on, I think is really what he meant, from now on, there will be no EA game released that isn't online.
Sure.
That doesn't have online capabilities.
Well, that's just a more direct version of the same statement that Valve has made.
Yeah.
We don't really see the whole completely offline single-player thing being something we're going to do ever again, is pretty much how they put it. But they're Valve, so they don't, you know, they talk in riddles half the time. And it's not terribly surprising, but in any way, again, it's very, very hard to find an angle where this isn't good. Where it is not pro-consumer.
Yeah.
I know we're so accustomed to the default position that EA is bad for people, but again, yeah, here you go. This isn't the worst thing in the world. They're not going to lose their shirts on it. They're absolutely not. And online connectivity with every one of their titles is going to be the reason why. But all the same, it's still a very good move.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. Very surprising. It was another article that... RPS took to poking a little fun at their own selves for saying, look, we can't find fault in
no,
this.
But I mean, that actually matters.
We've gone over the fine print, everything else. We really just can't find a problem with what this is.
Exactly. I don't mean to say anything bad about them, but if they, who were such effective champions of the fight against the things that EA had done...
Mm-hmm. Specifically, that's they had a crusade against
SimCity.
They can,
it's very important that any of us who have ever blathered on, argued about, fomented some kind of revolution against what we consider to be bad things, if those bad things are addressed or rectified or accounted for in some way, it's very nice to recognize those things. I am very much all for punishment and public shaming of big companies and that have anti-consumer practices. But I am also even more in support of positive reinforcement when they do the right thing. We tell people to vote with their wallets. This has become some kind of automatic generated response by anybody on the internet when we see somebody do something that we don't like. I would like to point out that not participating isn't voting with your wallet.
Right.
It's like not voting. It's like literally not going to the polls and not voting. You don't get counted. They just assume that you aren't a participant. Mm-hmm. They are more likely to assume they didn't market to you effectively enough, or that you're a pirate or something like that. The only way to cast a real vote, an affirmation, to say this is what I think, is to wait for them to do something good.
And support that.
And support the good thing. That's important if you care. And of all the people in the world who scream endlessly how much they care and how we should all vote with our wallets, I know it seems a little bit weird, but when you can, even if it's cheap, when it's discounted or when it's something you certainly believe in, support it if you can. Support is very important for the thing we love. Not just talking about it, not just being angry or feeling one way or another, or being heavily invested on whichever forum or group you happen to be involved with. It has to come down to money. It has to come down to money spent, product directly supported, preferably within the first month if you can. It's an odd arrangement. It's a very strange relationship that we have. But it is important, and positive reinforcement is a necessary thing. So everybody go out and buy something from EA and then return it. And show them how much you like that policy. That's a bad idea, by the way. Don't do that.
I don't know. You know, one of their other things was, if you aren't riveted by the storyline, sucked in by the action, yeah, blah, blah. Or even if the game doesn't play well with your video card, which is another thing that people can...
Oh, that's a good point. It alleviates a lot of concern that people have over the PC gaming market.
It's one of those things that I don't know if it'll run that well on my machine. Instead of going to can I run it or whatever that website is, it's just like, I'll just buy it, and if it runs, great. If it doesn't, mm-hmm. I can return it. You know, you get something like that. So interesting, and it's interesting to see if we'll get any kind of reactions or responses from the other digital distributors out there.
I don't know that any of them are in a position to do the same thing.
Maybe.
EA has their own storefront. Yes, they carry third-party titles, but they are primarily dealing in EA product.
Yeah, it's the only way you get Mass Effect 3.
Everybody else is copying Steam anymore. That wasn't always the case, but everybody's handling third-party stuff. Everybody's handling games that require relationships with other people. EA is their own product. They can do whatever they want with their own product.
Anyway, we've got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have the final segment of In-Game Chat. We will be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music from Geometry Wars. I don't know if that's one or two, but Geometry Wars it is. Welcome back to the show. Last little section of the broadcast here, and that's usually when we jump into the games we've been playing. I know that it's likely to span the length of it when they get into their Final Fantasy XIV talk, but I will say that I've been playing Payday 2, and I have been loving it. I've streamed some of it. I'm going to stream some more again, but we probably, the YouTube section, the YouTube part that we want to get up there, I think, is something I want to get when me and James and anybody else who involved with the show can get in on and get some playtime.
It's a little bit difficult because you don't really want all of your typical stream chatter going on over a game where you have public players or players
that you got into, like random players.
You don't really want to be doing that to them. You want to mm-hmm. be, they didn't show up to play the game to be a cast member in your stream. Or your YouTube video necessarily.
Right.
They just want to play the game.
The pickup group that I had for Thursday and for Friday, I don't know what their name is as far as their group, but, I know Acid is one of them, a guy from the UK, as well as Inguarded, I believe is his name, as well. I jumped into a random group, and the first thing they were telling me, first they couldn't figure out my name, so they called me Pisky. they were like, get down, Pisky boy, we're going full stealth.
Pisky boy.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I'm sorry, he's like, no, you're fine, just stick with us, we'll get you through this, it's no problem. I was like, I'm low level, can we do this? He's like, nah, it's cool, stick with us, we'll get you up there, we'll do this right. And have enjoyed it immensely. They've walked me through everything. When I've forgotten controls, I'm like, how do I do this? They're like, just press this button. And just, it's been great. We spent about an hour trying to completely stealth this one mission, and finally got it, earned a couple of million on the payoff on that thing. Great, great game. Loving it. Loving every minute of it. It's great. They are continually patching this game. Not because it's got issues. They're just saying, hey, this needs improvement. We've run into where this section is just, people are just running, you know, not running the gauntlet, but they're milking this mission, you know, that sort of thing. We need to make it more difficult.
It's an easy farming run.
That's the word I was trying to find. They're farming this mission. We need to find a way to not necessarily make it more difficult, but not to make it so easy to farm.
There's nothing wrong with making it more difficult. There is a long and healthy tradition of adversarial patching and exploiting between players and developers. It's perfectly fine. Players find a new way to deal with something, mm-hmm. And the developers find a new way to plug the hole. So,
and it's great because it constantly changes on stuff, and there's guys that are keeping up with that change log and how it's going. Loving this game. Really am. Can't wait for us to play it and get in there with Daniel in the chat room. Multile is in there. There's a lot of people who are
as long as we can put four people together that are show and friends of show who don't mind us being an absolute drunken disaster. I know that Daniel is already accustomed to that behavior of mine.
Military
so
special.
Are you. Yeah. I know Multile and I are birds of a feather where that's mm-hmm. concerned. So
Northern Ireland, you're fine. You guys would be fine together. So we'll try and do that and get some streams up. But man, fun game. I urge you, if you're on the fence with this, to if you've thought about it, there was Ghost Bear in the chat room was saying that, you know, after Payday 1, how bad that was. I can't see giving my money over to Payday 2. I never played Payday 1, so I can't make the comparison. I can just tell you I'm having a great time with Payday 2. So there you go. That's what I've been playing. That's how great it is. I'm going to turn it over. RJ, do you have anything to add before we jump into this?
No, I've just been still working on Dark Souls and Dragon's Crown, trying to level up to level 99 in that game. Not an easy task, but certainly possible.
In Dark Souls or Dragon Crown?
Both.
Yes.
Both. Exactly. That's your word.
Yeah. Are you still working through on the PC version of Dark Souls?
I haven't played it in a while, but I know exactly where I am, and I know where I need to go in that one. Like I said, I stopped in Blighttown at the first bonfire.
Yeah.
And I know it's coming, and I've
on a tear. I was on an absolute junky tear through that game. And then I got to Blighttown, and I was like, I think I need to take a break for a minute. I'm not entirely a fan of where I am and what I'm doing right now.
So what is it, the poison or the fire-breathing dogs or the enemies.
Sure, man. Blighttown. It's Blighttown and everything. I have been meaning. It isn't just that I hit a wall and I was like, no, I can't go any further. There really were so many other things to do, but I have experienced the joy of having some amount of experience in the game and then being able to talk a friend into playing it.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that I work with, he has started playing it as well. So he is kind of coming up behind me, and I get to have all those wonderful conversations about, like, I know where you are. I've done that already.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's going to be horrible.
He has no experience with the franchise ever at all. Okay.
No. Okay. It's a brand new thing. It's very fun, like passing down family secrets or something. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty good. But I haven't put any more time into it, unfortunately. Yeah. I'm still just sort of, Blighttown.
Well, the reason they haven't put any more time in that is because Dennis, and it's so great that you get to be with us on this episode as well.
Yeah.
Because you've put in some time with Final Fantasy XIV, Realm Reborn, and so has James. With that, I just hand it over to the two of you.
Right. Well, then it's not the only thing we've put in time with. They did
Well, if you want to talk about our streams,
When was it? They did the open beta last week?
Oh, no. Okay.
Is that right?
So it was last week. Yeah, I think
last week. The supposed open beta prior to going into the live. It was really badly done, really badly handled. Because we were talking about it on the show. It's what I was playing when we recorded a week ago. And then I got home, and that was it. My character was locked out. There were an enormous number of bugs plaguing the system. Tons and tons and tons of people couldn't get back in to get their fix, which is mostly what everybody was upset about. But it did, it was a very, very short open beta. They were pretty clear. They were pretty straightforward about the fact that they were treating it as a marketing tool, as an advertisement.
Well, I mean, everybody who was in beta 4, their characters will carry over into the main game.
Right. That's exactly right. Any progress you made up to certain limits, up to level 20, and certain places in the storyline, they wanted to cap you out because they didn't want you exhausting the content. That's understandable and completely fair. But they fully intended, obviously, for it to be something a little more than what everybody says when they say a thing is a beta. Don't worry about things that don't work. Don't worry about them communicating their progress fixing certain issues. It's a beta. Yeah, it's very hard to be patient when people tell you things like that. You're not hearing anything from a developer. So it was a bad, kind of a bad short open beta. And then this past week was plagued with all sorts of issues, web-based issues with people mm-hmm. redeeming their pre-order codes, being able to redeem rewards from having played the very first version of the game several years ago and being considered legacy members that are afforded all sorts of extra benefits and collectibles and things that I don't personally care about. But most of that got ironed out as well. I mean, it's that it got fixed is true in almost every case. But and I have played huge numbers of MMOs. I'm very familiar with first week shenanigans, with open betas, closed betas, launches, long-term, short-term support, all of this stuff. They're not doing too bad. Today, I'm a little out of sorts because today, our time, the game unlocked for early access for everybody that has a pre-order. You can start playing the game proper today, and that was 4 a.m. our time. And yeah, I got up at 4 a.m. and I played the game until I had to go lay down and take a nap because I'm old. But
and because you got up at 4 a.m.
And because
regardless.
I got up at 4 a.m. Yeah.
That has nothing to do with age. You got up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I jumped in on about 10 o'clock, and that's when
about
first,
5 minutes before the first server main.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah. Before they brought it down for the first
timing,
time.
Timing, you has it.
Yeah, I know, man.
But it's a little bit hard to say anything meaningful about it right now. It's kind of a wreck. It's not running the way it's supposed to be. A lot of the instanced content isn't working right. A lot of the matchmaking services are completely broken, and the way that they've designed the game, those things are integral to moving forward in the story. And the story is integral in moving you forward in the quest line.
Mm-hmm.
So you really cannot level up at a certain rate or past a certain point if anything in that is broken, if any element of it isn't functioning correctly. There are good things to that. I think one of the historical problems in an MMO is getting the masses of players who never really do participate in group content comfortable with and moved into doing that group content. And so they've made it a requirement. But they've also made it kind of instructional and fairly easy. It's kind of rudimentary, and it's certainly not very challenging or engaging to somebody who's played a lot of other MMOs. But I don't know. That's perfectly fair. That's absolutely fair. I don't need to be... I understand that this is a theme park MMO. I understand mm-hmm. that it is story-based. They are trying to pull MMO gimmicks and tell a Final Fantasy story. Whatever, man. I'm fine. You only charged me $30 for the game. You're being fairly generous. By all measures and accounts, you've done a really good job turning what was kind of a trashy launch 3 years ago into a fairly polished launch this time around. So I'm willing to see what they have on offer. At the moment, I'm just kind of going along with things, and the 500 million cat women running around. And I don't know. We'll see where it takes us. I figure a couple weeks from now we'll be able to, you know, have something really proper and firm to say about it. At the moment, it's crowded with dudes playing female cats, not enough quest mobs, broken instancing, slow gameplay, and it's still kind of fun in spite of all that. So there you go, right? Because that's a good piece of information sometimes. Everything's broken and it isn't exactly what I wanted, but it's still
fun.
But
it's still fun, yeah.
I suppose that's okay.
It still brings joy. It's what you want from a Final Fantasy Online game.
You know, it. I mean, all always personal preference on this. You guys are having fun with it. I know Daniel has tried very hard to have fun with it, and it just isn't working for him. He says it took him about 48 minutes after character creation to get into the first
It's
combat.
Because it is incredibly story-driven. Mm-hmm. It is incredibly cutscene and narrative-driven.
It's incredibly Final Fantasy.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly the point. It isn't going to be a 30-second flyover with a brief piece of voice acting to describe what it is your character does, and then you hop in and you start doing quests. It is not that. It is not as fluid and clean and fast as really any other MMO in that vein.
Unskippable cutscenes?
Some of them are unskippable.
Oh, okay.
And I believe for the majority of them, you're only going to see them once. A lot of them are skippable. Mm. It's just not easy to see how.
Yeah, that's not something that bothers me because that's what I expected from Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I'm just trying. I mean, I know nothing about this. I haven't even looked into it. So I'm just trying to throw you guys some questions that maybe some of the listeners might have. But
it's fine. It's unskippable cutscenes isn't a deal breaker unless it's like a 12-minute cutscene I have to watch over and over again because one boss keeps killing me.
Nearly like that. Nothing is like that at all. And as a matter of fact, even the story-sensitive cutscenes can be skipped. I have skipped several already because I watched them in detail back during a previous beta phase.
What server are you guys on?
We are on the Ultros server, which is a North American...
How do people friend up with you? Do they have to know your character's name?
They have to know your character name on that server. I'm not even sure at the moment you can create a character on that server. Mm. It's incredibly congested and overpopulated.
I just didn't know if there's anything you wanted to throw out there to say, hey, if you want to get in touch with us.
It is the one of the interesting things about the game is that you are free to create several different characters, but every class, every gathering profession, every crafting profession, every job, everything can be done on one character. All of that. You are unrestricted in your ability to do everything the game has to offer on a single character, which I find kind of enabling, I guess. I don't have to go all the way back to zero necessarily to try out something different. There are an awful lot of benefits to people decide to do something like that. And again, I do understand. I am well past the point of trying to sell MMOs to people who don't like MMOs.
Yeah.
There are very particular things I like about them. And I am a very particular kind of MMO player. I don't like the leveling process. I don't care for it. I don't mind quests. There are certain aspects of leveling up that I find fun and a little bit rewarding. If if the combat can be said to be fun at all, if the reward system and the loot system can be said to be interesting in the least. These are things I enjoy. What I like and the thing that I find best in MMOs is that they are at end game, when everything, when it's no longer about finding another level, when it's no longer about completing the next quest, when there's really no world left to explore, to me, it is the best expression of large-scale cooperative gameplay. When you're talking about small groups, medium-sized groups, large groups, defeating a dungeon and a computer-controlled enemy. There are a lot of people who claim that none of that stuff has any challenge and none of it is significant in any way. And look, I understand if you honestly feel that way, but that's simply not the case. Many of these games provide a lot of... If you really think that they have no challenge in them, then you've never really tried the challenging content. And that's the stuff that I enjoy. And it requires a lot of timing, positioning, communication, concentration, cooperation with other human beings doing everything correctly. It only seems easy because people get good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get used to running the same raid over and over. So yeah, everybody's got their marching orders. They know, right, I have to be here at this particular time in the confrontation.
Right. And again, I understand you become powerful enough that engagements don't pose any particular challenge anymore. You get so much gear that the gear that you would get from a current engagement doesn't matter at all. And then the content itself gets nerfed or reduced in difficulty over a period of time. But that's almost always in response to new gear, new content, new challenges. And those new things, that working together with other people to do what is essentially the same thing you're doing when you play something like Payday or when you play Hidden and Dangerous or when you play any other kind of RPG with other people. It is an inherently cooperative experience with a lot of other people to do something fun like that. That's what I get out of them.
Yeah.
And I find that to be best in a game like this with a more traditional structure, a more traditional loot-based, level-based, subscription-based piece of gameplay. It is not for everyone. Like I said, I'm well past trying to sell it to people who aren't interested.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they might have a good game on their hands. And I'll point out that I play everything I can get my hands on, and most of them don't do a great job of it. Most of them I wind up leaving after a period of time. I'm not a huge devotee of any one of them anymore. But I'm always willing to give them a chance. And I think Square Enix may have done something fairly good here. We'll see. The first weeks, even the first couple of months of an MMO never tell the story. It's all about long-term support.
Yeah.
It's all about what they offer to the people who choose to spend money and stick around. People who want challenge, people who want, you know, a good time for their money.
And you guys are going to be doing some streams of that throughout next week.
Yeah, they currently still have an embargo on videos and streams.
Assuming that comes up, Tuesday. Yeah, exactly.
But after that point, we're going to be streaming some stuff. We'll stream dungeon content and maybe a little bit of leveling stuff, maybe a little bit of exposure of the later game stuff, depending on how quickly we can get there. But
yeah.
I think we're both enjoying it. It's nice to have It's nice to have Dennis in there because I don't usually have a local friend in any of the MMOs I'm playing. I just get blank stares from the room when I talk about it.
Especially from something like this, which is completely out of my realm. But anyway, we'll have more details about that, obviously, in episodes to come. They'll get more time into it and have plenty to say on it. But just a show note that next week we're going to have a replay of some previous show. I have no idea which one we'll replay, but we're going to replay a show next weekend. We will not be live in the studio. I'm going to be in Seattle at PAX, so won't be here to do a show. So just keep that in mind. We will, however, have plenty of content on our Twitch account going up. We'll be doing streams. We'll be throwing some stuff up on YouTube as well. So plenty of stuff to go to take the place of us since we will not be here next week.
I think we will probably be live on the stream at this point.
Yeah,
next week.
Showtime, just be live doing stuff. Yeah,
maybe definitely. Talking about what's happening at PAX.
Yeah,
who
go
knows?
For it.
So at least one or two of us should be available.
But yeah,
unfortunately,
go for it.
We will not be live on the air.
But that is it. Don't forget the show following next week on the 7th will be a music-oriented video game, music-oriented show. That was redundant. But anyway, we're going to have, we've got composers lined up for you. Going over the list, we have Stephen Barton from he's composing Titanfall. He will be on the show on the 7th. We are also looking at Tom Salta. He will be on the show on the 7th. He is the composer of Ghost Recon, as well as some other games. He also composed Halo Spartan Assault. As well, Tommy Tallarico will be on the show from Video Games Live, currently doing a Kickstarter on that. We'll be having him on the show and talking about that, and trying to secure some other guests for that episode. But it'll be all music-related with those interviews. So we hope that you can join us. You guys have sent in some stuff for us to play. We'll get those on there as well. So really do appreciate that. You can still send those in, everyone, at ingamechat.net. So appreciate it and hope you guys will join us for that episode on the 7th of September. So thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as well as everybody listening on the stream or even on the radio as well. Thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or, you know, however you get our show for later use. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums over at colonyofgamers.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and subscribe to our Twitch feed as well, so you can catch all the games. We did a lot of Twitch stuff this past week. James got Sir, You Are Being Hunted. Jeremy and Dennis both got Binding of Isaac up there. And Matt got Amnesia up there. Might do a good little Halloween stream of some...
We've already got several ideas of things to stream during October.
Definitely going to look into to doing some of that. So do that. Don't forget to join our Steam group if you've got Steam, because we give away free games. And as soon as this Humble Bundle's over... people are going to have a lot of games that they want to unload because they just wanted one from the pack or whatever the case may be. So there'll be a ton of free games to be given away out there. And I think, do we still have our Minecraft server going?
I think so.
Yeah, Minecraft server, play.
We haven't had much time for it.
No, play.ingamechat.net. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will see you on Saturday the 7th. Have a great couple of 2 weeks here, and thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.